Brendan Power is famous internationally as a phenomenal harmonica player in many genres and also as an instrument innovator. He's invented many unique harmonicas to increase the expressiveness and range possibilities of the instrument family and is constantly experimenting. His website is linked in the description. Brendan also has a fascinating personal story in that he discovered the harmonica in his university years and changed his life in order to master it. He's completely self-taught, and you may have heard him playing on albums with Sting, Kate Bush, Van Morrison, movies like Shanghai Noon and Atonement, or over 20 of his solo albums. I was thrilled to have this opportunity to speak with him, but unfortunately, we had some really big internet delays, which you may notice as a few instances of unavoidably choppy editing. During the episode, Brendan demonstrates a few of his harmonicas in different styles, and I've added timestamps to the description.
Let's just say hello. Okay. Thank you so much, Brendan Power, for joining me today.
Thanks, Leah. Nice to be asked.
Yes, I found out about you through fiddler Janie Rothfield, and then I just found out about this whole world of harmonicas that I didn't realize existed. And what I find so inspiring about your story is not only that you're such an incredible musician, but that you were motivated to become an inventor in the pursuit of more expressive playing. And I find that so wonderful. So to start off, I know you, you've developed so many harmonicas and you're always developing new harps. Can you show us some of those and different styles that you can play on, and then we can get more into your story?
Sure. Well, I've got a whole batch of box of different ones there, and another box of more there. But maybe I'll start with this one here. This is one it looks like a standard chromatic harmonica, but it's actually been substantially changed. And I call it the Asia Bend. So it just gives you lots of big bends. I was inspired by Chinese music to play this one. So maybe if I choose to...
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
So that's, hopefully you recognize that.
Yeah.
Ah, Amazing Grace it was.
I did recognize it, and I was trying to, yeah.
Did you recognize it? Yeah. Okay. So basically, this harmonica just allows you to bend every note really expressively. It was inspired by the Chinese instrument, the erhu, which is a fiddle instrument with a kind of a snakeskin gourd at the bottom, and it's incredibly expressive. So that's what I altered the harmonica to try and get that sort of Chinese sound, but I found it's really good for all sorts of Western.
I expected you to play something Chinese, so when you started playing Amazing Grace, I was sort of like, my ears were wrapping around the sound. I thought, is it that tune that I recognize? And I think for all kinds of Middle Eastern music and Indian music as well, that the type of bends you can do very easily.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Indian music I just love listening to. It's such a huge, quite imposing sort of discipline and area that, you'd have to almost, I feel like I have to give up everything else in my life and just devote myself to that to do it justice. But I do love Indian music. It's just, I think to do it well.
Right. Yeah. Really, but I meant for players in that tradition, for musicians playing other instruments in Indian traditions, they could pick up one of these Asia Bend harmonicas and find the notes they need.
Good point. Yes, I did develop it partly for people in those traditions, to try and explore themselves. I mean, there's quite a history of in Indian music, for instance, they've taken all sorts of Western instruments and Indianized them. You know, like the way they play the violin, where they sit on the floor and the actual head of the violin is in the crook of their foot, supported, and that allows their hand to slide up and down without, and they don't have to support the instrument with their hand. So it means their hand is totally free to slide up and down the neck and get those incredible bending, sliding pitch things that happen in Indian music. So that's, they haven't changed the instrument. Well, there are some. There's a guy called Subramaniam, I think, who's made some amazing, weird violins. But most of them just play a standard violin, but they've really changed the whole way of playing it. You know, the sitting down. And then there's other instruments like the, you know, the what we call the slide guitar or the dobro. There's, you know, they've really done some amazing stuff with that. The way they play, added sympathetic strings, and you know, played in a whole new way. And even on keyboards, there's some people playing amazing stuff on keyboards. And the most recent thing is the iPad. You know, Indian music musicians have just taken to the iPad incredibly well, because of course, on the iPad screen, it's just a slippery, slidey thing. And there's apps now which allow you to get microtones, you know, between the different finger positions. And there's some amazing stuff being done on iPads actually by Indian musicians. So yeah, so this harmonica in a way wasn't a, you know, a way to give harmonica players there something that was would have give them a sound that was more authentic for their own music. The only other thing about it is it's a pretty quirky harmonica. It's an all-draw harmonica. Most harmonicas are blow and draw. You know, you blow, you get a note on the out-breath and on the in-breath. This is all draw, so it's really quite a tricky instrument to play for anyone who's used to playing a normal harmonica. So, you know, it might take a, it might, you know, not get a lot of acceptance there.
Is do you find you might hyperventilate because it's all on the in-breath?
No, I mean, basically, it's just the mirror image of all other wind instruments apart from the harmonica. You know, where it's an all and out breath. You know, saxophone, flute, recorder, whatever. I mean, they've been doing that for you know, centuries. Thousands of years probably. And what they do is they just blow for a while, and when they run out of breath, they go do a quick little in breath and then keep playing. This one is the opposite. You know, I just play away, and as soon as when I get full, I just do a quick out breath and then keep playing. So, you know, that's not actually a problem. It's just, you know, the reverse of what you do on a saxophone.
That's interesting. So, Brendan, you and some of my listeners might be interested to know, I did speak with a Carnatic violinist in the series last year, Southern Indian, and also an Arhu player as well, and
Oh, wow.
Very recently a Comanche player. So I try to really, all kinds of musicians and styles. And actually, because of when I was researching you,
Wow.
because of your really cool Bulgarian album, and what is the name of that musician, the gadulka player, Georgi Petrov? You know, I was looking at you know, that whole style of music, which I've always loved, and then I was looking into speaking with a gadulka player, which is the Bulgarian violin. It's just so interesting to me.
Those Balkan musicians are just so high level. I mean, we think we're quite clever in the West, you know, if we play, you know, a couple of odd time signatures, but they live and breathe, you know, sort of irregular meters, you know, like 7, 5, 9, 11, 13, 15. You know, it's just like their mother's milk. They just do them. I remember when I first met Georgi, it was really my first exposure to, you know, things like 7/8 and whatever. But I was sitting next to him. I was in the River Dance show, the band for the popular dance thing, you know, the River Dance show that happened in the late 20th century, early 21st. So we were sitting in the band for about a year or two together, or yeah, 2 or 3 years we toured together. And you know, he'd play after the gig and you know, listen to the music, and it was just so alien, but also very enticing and really interesting. So over time, I asked him more about it, and he explained more. And I went over to Bulgaria and got to know some of these amazing Bulgarian musicians. I mean, I'm just you know, scratch the surface really, but I did get a, you know, sort of enough of a feeling for it that I composed a tune or two in a, you know, Bulgarian style. But yeah, I've got so much respect for those guys, because not only can they play amazing Bulgarian music, you go over there and they play incredible rock music, jazz, and all the other stuff that we we're used to as well, classical music. So then I think, yeah, amazing musicians, those Balkan musicians.
Yeah, so you started tinkering and inventing almost as soon as you started learning the harmonica, from what I understand.
Yeah, correct. I've just got that kind of, I guess some people are like that, aren't they? They want to pull things apart, see how they work. So, yeah, soon after I started playing, I started figuring out that, oh, it's those reeds that make the sound, the little free reeds, and that if you could file the end of a reed and it would go higher in pitch, or you could put weight on the end, it would go lower in pitch, and that means I could alter the tuning. So quite quickly, I was doing things like that, changing tunings, within a year or two of starting to playing, and that makes a huge difference to what the stuff you can play on a harmonica, and also how well you can play it for a particular style. So I now, use harmonicas many different tunings.
Yeah, and actually, so we started with the Asia Bend harmonica. So you were doing Taoist studies at university when you discovered the harmonica, and you didn't have any kind of music background. I find it so fascinating that you just became so absorbed.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was like a, what they call it, a Damascene moment, wasn't it? When you just something hits you. And yeah, I went to this concert, Sonny Terry and Barney McGee. Someone dragged me along because it was free, and I'd never heard of them before. But for any of your listeners who don't know them, they were two great blues players from an earlier era. I mean, I think I saw them in '76, and they were probably in their 60s by then. Or 70s maybe even, but they had Sonny Terry was blind, played the harmonica in this most amazing way, and Brownie McGee, a great singer guitarist. Funnily enough, by the time they'd by the time I saw them, they were really not they didn't want to they hated each other basically, as many of these long-term duos go. And they were on opposite ends of the stage, and they'd make sort of snide remarks about each other to the audience, but they didn't actually talk directly to each other. And Brownie would play tricks on Sonny, where Sonny was blind and he had his harmonicas in a kind of a belt around his waist. So Brownie would start a key in a certain tune, and Sonny would hunt around and eventually find the right one. As soon as he got the right one, Brownie would change key. So Sonny had to go through the whole process again. So there was all this kind of thing going on, in front of the audience. But when they did play together, it was just amazing, mind-blowing. And I was just so inspired by the sound of the harmonica, I went out and bought one the next day. And it was a whole, yeah, it just I don't know how those things happen in life, but and I was 20 by that stage, so pretty late
Yeah.
to start
And
start at it.
you, like, it, I was thinking, so you didn't grow up with that much music in the house, certainly not popular music. You didn't have a TV, as I understand. But your dad had a workshop, so that part, huge part of your career as an inventor, was he influenced you that way?
Yes, I mean, it's probably one of those things you inherit in your genes. So he was a really fine metal worker, had lathes and all sorts of things, quite big machines. I deal with smaller machines, but I've got that same bent. And one of my brothers, Steve, is similar. On my mother's side, she was more artistic. She painted and did batik and stuff. So it's a little bit of that as well. I love calligraphy and things like that. But yeah, we. Definitely something from my parents, is transferred into what I do now.
And your early days, so you were in Christchurch and then you went to Auckland, and you're just learning and starting to play with people, but the scene there was pretty rich in terms of opportunities to play with different kinds of people.
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand is it's a small country a long, long way away from anywhere. So, there's definitely a scene. It's nothing like the scene, of course, in the US or Britain or Canada, I guess. But there's definitely a thriving music scene. But most of the musicians, I suppose, because it's partly we don't have our own long tradition as you do, say, in Ireland, where people grow up. It's been something going on for centuries. New Zealand's a young country with incoming people have gone there from many parts of the world. So we tend to just be like magpies. We listen to what's coming in and learn it. So most of the musicians there learn from, would have learned from records or CDs or whatever from overseas. And most would play many different styles pretty well. So that's another thing about if you want to make a living as a musician in New Zealand, you can't really specialize too much in just one thing. You know, you have to be quite good at, you know, different things so that, you know, you can get enough gigs to survive. But yeah, there was a very thriving scene, certainly in Auckland in the early 1980s or throughout their whole 80s. It was really lots and lots of gigs and, you know, lots of opportunities to play, and also did quite a bit of studio work, started to do some studio work there as well.
So when you were first learning by yourself, you really didn't know what you were doing. From what I understand, you were kind of doing things wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah, I had no idea, you know, what a scale was or a tune. So yeah, it was just totally from scratch. Even now, I've never learned to read music. So I just do things by ear. But I've learned enough about music theory in terms of, you know, what chords are and why certain runs sound good over certain chords, you know, how, but I don't think in terms of the names of notes. I sort of think in terms of numbers, you know, a bit like the Nashville system. So, you know, if you've got a scale, you know, you've got your one, you've got your three, you've got your five, those are the main notes. So everything's numbers for me. Well, I'm not thinking numbers really, you know, explicitly, but that's how I relate. And also with the harmonica, I mean, basically, certainly with the diatonic harmonica, I mean, you've got one harmonica for every key. So if you were trying to think, right, okay, D sharp. Now, is that whole five draw, or is that? So on one harmonica, it would be whole five draw, but on another one, it might be whole seven blow. So, you know, it's really, in some ways, thinking about note names is actually really difficult. Whereas if you think more numbers, then the numbers transfer from every harmonica, one harmonica to the other. So your one is always in whole two or whole five or whatever. So that's how I think of it. But yeah, I mean, I really admire people who can read music, though I've met some people who can read brilliant music and it sort of almost inhibits them from playing freely. They need to have a piece of paper in front of them or they literally cannot play a note. I mean, I've met people like that, quite a few, which I think is terrible. On the other hand, I've met other people, there's plenty of people like myself who can't read a note and we miss out in many ways ourselves, but we sort of find our own ways. I think the best is the people who can read but also can play by ear. You know, that's really the best.
So you were when you moved to London, you did a lot of studio recordings. You've been on major movie soundtracks and written soundtracks. So how did that process work since you're not a note reader? Would they give you a recording to listen to, I guess?
Good question. Yeah, mostly they'd get, yes, they would give me a recording to listen to beforehand, and then I'd get a feel for it. I mean, yeah, so and also I might write things out in sort of a primitive sort of tab as well, you know, like you can actually, with harmonicas, you can, there's a sort of a tab system, a bit like guitars, you know, where you can, instead of notes, you can say, yeah, hole three draw, it's hole three with an arrow going down. So I'd write out a few basic ideas like that, but I couldn't actually sight read them. It would more just as an aid to memory or something like that.
So you became very well known as an Irish player, which is interesting. It's not exactly in the tradition of Irish music to have a harmonica. And you won this championship, I think, in 1993.
Yeah, I mean, I came over to the British to Britain in 1992, and I'd already been playing some Irish music because of my grandfather's Irish, and my dad had some Irish records at home, so I heard the music as a kid, even though I didn't play it. But then after I'd been playing blues for a bit, I started to try and play some of these Irish tunes that I'd heard, you know, at home. So by the time I got here, I was playing, I had a small repertoire of Irish tunes, and I was, you know, just playing them on the harmonica, and I'd sort of tuned up harmonica especially for it. And then I heard about this thing called the All-Ireland Competition, which is kind of an annual gathering of Irish traditional musicians, and there's categories in each instrument. I guess a bit like they have in sort of bluegrass kind of things, but this is a national competition. And but there's sub-competitions in all the countries that have Irish diasporas around. So in Britain there was there's an Irish, quite a big Irish community. So I went into the All England one and went into the harmonica area and sort of won that. But then there was some muttering behind the scenes and some complaints from the other musicians, because I was playing a harmonica with a, if I find one here, with a button on the end, you know, the chromatic harmonica. So So I could do little, you know, little trills and things like that, which they weren't able to do on their diatonic harmonicas. And they said, but he's cheating. So I got shifted into the miscellaneous instruments category. And that was really bizarre. I mean, there was people with banjos with, you know, huge long neck banjos, melodicas, hammered dulcimers. So I was in that area. But anyway, I won that. And then I went to Ireland and won the miscellaneous instrument category on my chromatic harmonica. So, yeah, that was a funny episode.
And what was it like being in the scene in London? It must have been very frenetic with being doing a lot of studio recordings.
I mean, I was playing gigs. I was more playing in the folk scene in Britain than playing gigs mm-hmm. in London. I mean, I did play some gigs in London, but I was more touring around and playing in folk festivals mm-hmm. around Britain, Ireland, a bit of Europe. And so that was really I was more in that touring folk area than London-based pubs. Most London gigs are pubs, basically, and they tend to focus on things like popular music, pop, rock, things like that. So I wasn't really doing a lot of that.
I noticed you've played with several really famous musicians, including Sting on his 10 Summoners Tales album. You're featured along with Larry Adler.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's just out of the blue. I mean, I'd only been in Britain about 6 months, and I sent off a cassette to various I looked up in the the who's who in the music scene, in terms of record companies, sent off cassette at that time, early 90s, of some demo bits, and heard nothing back, was money was running out and things weren't happening. I was thinking, oh, maybe it's time to go back to New Zealand. And then I got a ring and said, Sting wants you to come and play on his record, which is kind of like from nothing to an international superstar. So anyway, he picked me up in his car. We went down to the studio and, I did a bit of playing. And then I ended up playing on a video, a recording for the album, 10 Summoners Tales. And it's one of his, he's got houses all over the world, Italy, America, a really nice one in London. And then a lovely homestead in Salisbury, where Stonehenge is. And, so anyway, I went down there for a few days and played with these extraordinary musicians like David Sanchez on keyboards and Vinnie Colaiuta on the drums, Sting. And that was quite a, amazing, change of pace from being, nothing happening at all to suddenly that happening. But it was only a limited period of time while they promoted the album.
Did you get to meet Larry Adler?
I met him in a different context, but not in that context. Unfortunately, by the time I went to Salisbury, I think Larry was pretty ill and he couldn't go. And so I ended up playing a track that he played on the album. I forget the name of it now. But anyway, it's a lovely track that he plays on the album. But anyway, I played on that on the video in Salisbury because I think I can't remember, but he couldn't be there for, I think health reasons.
Yeah, it was interesting when I was researching that album, I was saying, who else was on this album, And I saw that it's just a small little footnote, but for violinist, Simon Fisher played, and he's super famous as a violin pedagogue. He's written tons of books. So for any classical violinist, they would probably know that name, Simon Fisher. That was interesting. And this CD in 1994 is documented as the first item sold on the internet. Just one of those little facts that came up. I thought that was interesting.
Wow, that's
And you're kind of an early adopter of...
Wow. You mean as a streaming...
No, not as a download. I believe it was purchased on the internet and shipped. That was my understanding. It was first... because it was 1994. Maybe I have to check the facts, but it said it was the first item securely purchased over the internet. So I don't know if it would have been a download back then, because that would have taken 10 days to download. Yeah. Maybe it was just the transaction.
No, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You mean when you say the first item purchased on the first item of any kind?
I think I read this on Wikipedia.
Or flowers or
first item of any kind. Yeah, I'll have to double check that, but that's what I read. we were talking about Irish music, and I really love the recording you did with Lucy Randall, the Boran player. It's really so beautiful. Could you play a... Yeah.
Yeah, she's great.
Could you
she's
play fantastic. An Irish tune for us, actually? Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, sure. I'm just trying to think. Okay, so... maybe a jig going into a reel, so...
Two
Irish tunes. That was, I don't know if you picked that up. I think, is it, second one is called The Corner House. I can't remember the first one, but they were in two sort of really popular time signatures, you know, the jig, which is 6/8. That's the jig. And then the reel, which is more like the 2/4. You know, that kind of, so those were two different types of tune. I mean, normally you'd play each one 3 or 4 times before going into the other one, but I just can put them one time each. And then the structure of them is normally,
I was wondering, like, you have a 3D printer, so in terms of the customizations you can do for your customers, it's not just your own harmonicas you've developed, but you also do custom work?
Yeah, I do. You know, you can do all sorts of things to with harmonicas, amazing amount of things. But retuning is one obvious thing. All my harmonicas are in alternate tuning, so I'm really good at retuning harmonicas. Most people play in a couple of, there's two stock tunings, like the chromatic normally comes in a particular tuning called solo tuning. Then the diatonic often comes in what's called Richter tuning. So probably 90% or 95% even of players in the world play it just in those two tunings. That's all they know and are interested in. But there is a sort of probably a growing interest in alternate tunings. And so one of the things I was doing when I was doing that work was, you know, to retune them. And then you can also make them work a lot better by doing fine, intricate reed work under a microscope, you know, just to get the reeds passing through the slots, the finer tolerances. And I was also doing more radical things like chopping harmonicas up and making smaller and bigger ones and stacking them up one on top of the other. So, you know, all that kind of thing. To be honest, these days I've learnt CAD design and I can make far more interesting, complicated and interesting harmonicas, but I more do that sort of stuff for my own pleasure and for trying to make, you know, strange new harmonicas that I can play. I'm not sort of so doing custom work for other people or handwork for other people much anymore.
We started talking about Asia Bend harmonica at the beginning of this conversation, and the harmonica, it descended from an ancient Chinese instrument, right? Like the sheng, or how's it pronounced?
Yeah, the free reed principle, if you like, this where you've got this vibrating reed. I don't know why they call it a free reed because it's actually fixed at one end, but this reed vibrating through a slot. It's really ancient. I mean, the jaw harp or what used to be called the jew's harp. That's a free reed instrument, and you've got a whole family of those kind of things in Asia. So that whole thing came from Asia, maybe China. And it was really only in the ni early 19th century that those free reed instruments started to become made in a Western forms, like the harmonica, accordion, concertina, bandoneon. All that whole family of instruments is all, essentially based on a far older free reed family from Asia, East Asia.
So Hohner was a watchmaker, and I think I was reading, I think it was before him, there was like a trend in Germany that men wore these harmonicas as like jewelry. They were like little wrist ornaments before it became a thing. And I think, like, did you read that? Have you heard that history?
No.
No,
No.
really? Okay. Yeah, and that they were first developed to tune pianos like around 1820, and then after that it became like a little ornament, and then Hohner like a man's hand bracelet, and then after that he developed it into a real instrument. So yeah, I was really fascinated. I was wondering about the iPad. You had mentioned about using it in different ways, but I know you use it with harmonicas to get cool effects that are freely available to people. I've seen some of your videos. Can you show us some of that today, or would that be too complicated?
It'd be too complicated today, I'm sorry to say. It's all in another room,
Yeah.
and it's tight,
Sure.
yeah, so I couldn't really. But yeah, the iPad, I don't know if you've ever explored one for music yourself.
I haven't.
Well, I'd really recommend it. It's an incredible music machine. I mean, for not just, it could be whatever music you're into, but there's huge number of amazing apps. I use it mostly for well, various things. Looping is one. There's a great looping app in there. But also through using a MIDI harmonica. Again, I don't have that in this. I'm just sitting in my kitchen right now, so I don't have all that stuff with me. But there's a MIDI, very some MIDI harmonicas have come out recently, and these are really interesting. They have no reeds, but they play with, they use breath sensors, a bit like the iwi. I don't know if you've heard of the Akai iwi and various wind synths in the form of saxophones, whatever. David Michael Brecker was a great exponent of them. Anyway,
Okay.
now there's MIDI just about everything. There's MIDI recorders, MIDI violins, MIDI this, MIDI that, and MIDI harmonicas. And yeah, they're mind-blowing because basically you can just play any sound you like, and there's all sorts of amazing things they can do which traditional harmonicas can't do. So I've been enjoying exploring that. And the iPad is actually my main interface. So I just plug in my MIDI harmonica into the iPad, and there's a whole bunch of apps. You're a cello player, I believe. Is that right?
I'm a violinist.
Oh, sorry, Leah. Okay. Well, you would be amazed by this. Have you heard of SWAM, Audio Modeling? The SWAM company, the Italian company called Audio Modeling? No. Well, you'd be amazed. I mean, there's the re realism that you can get now from these. The company's called Audio Modeling, but the apps are called SWAM apps. So you get SWAM violin, SWAM cello, SWAM saxophone, etc. So the actual realism you can get from these things is just mind-blowing. And so yeah, I really recommend you check it out. So yeah,
What
I
one
really
of your
love
videos that
playing that stuff.
Sorry, it's hard with the delay. One of the videos I saw you were showing people was just a regular diatonic harmonica with effects on an iPad. It sounded amazing, like you made it sound like an electric guitar, but just through these free effects. I thought that was really generous of you, because a lot of the stuff you're showing on your YouTube channel is just to help people out, like how to tinker with their own harmonicas and open them up to make their own changes.
I mean, I just get enthusiastic about a certain thing, and then it just I think, oh, I bet other people, so a few other people might be interested in this, so Sometimes I'll make a video about it. But yeah, amplifying the harmonica is a whole thing, and how to use effects and how to cut the microphone and stuff like that. That's a whole, what's the word? A whole scene, I suppose. So, and some people are, you know, just that's all they do. They play amplified harmonica, or you know, but you can get some amazing sounds just from the harmonica by putting it through guitar mm-hmm. effects. I mean, transforms the sound altogether, makes it sound huge like a saxophone. So, yeah, I enjoy that as well.
So when you started playing, you were playing blues because that was your first inspiration. And from what I understand, regular Richter tuning isn't the best for bending notes. Like it's kind of hard to do.
It's a funny thing, actually, the way it all happened. I just wonder if I've got a harmonica I can demonstrate what happened. Yeah, so I think this one. So basically, Richter tuning was devised by the Germans in the 19th century. Okay, this is before blues had been. Well, maybe it was being played by the African Americans, but before the recording age, so no one else had heard it really, and it wasn't a thing. So you know, the harmonica was designed before all that, but they came up with a thing called Richter tuning. So it's got two chords in the bottom, so. So you just get a blow chord on your out breath, and you get an in chord. You get the tonic chord on your out breath, and the dominant chord on your in breath. And so this is the bottom octave of the harmonica. Now it's not really intended for playing melodies; it's purely for chordal accompaniment. So in the middle octave, you got your melody notes. So the idea is to play out of one side of your mouth, slap your tongue off the bottom end, and you get chordal accompaniment. So so roughly, sort of. So that's how the Germans, intended the harmonica to sound. But what happened was, you know, it was a small instrument, cheap, and it got disseminated widely in the millions around the world. And the African Americans picked it up. And they discovered that if you played it essentially in the wrong key, if you played it in the dominant key instead of the home key, all your main notes were draw notes. And they could all be bent. So, you know, the tune like Mary Had a Little Lamb, instead of going, it would be more. So, you know, just a totally different flavor. Of course, they wouldn't play Mary Had a Little Lamb. They'd be. they play more sort of bluesy sort of stuff on it. But it's a pure accident of, history and a clash of cultures or something that the whole blues harp style eventuated on the harmonica. But getting back to your question. There are certain limitations from the Richter tuning, that the early tuning, that mean that only a small number of notes can actually be bent. This sound, there's only, you know, there's 20 reeds and only 8 of them can be bent. So a big part of my tinkering history has been try to bend more notes, because I love the sound of bent notes and the expression you can get from them. So yes, the Richter tuning is great. It turned out to be amazing for blues, even though it wasn't designed for blues, but it still has some limitations. And I really love to try and, you know, expand what the harmonica can do.
So you developed this Paddy Richter tuning early on that made it better.
That was one for Irish music. And basically, like on this harmonica, this is pure Richter. So you've got two notes the same in the bottom octave. Those two are, that note is in each chord. So you have two notes the same. But for playing Irish music, it's much easier to... So this is a D harmonica. So now instead of two notes the same as they would be, I'd say, on this one, I change one of them to, and that note makes a big difference. So that's a note that I put in there. I change one of these ones. Don't want to. I've just brought it up to there. You can get it on a normal harmonica. To bend, you have to bend down to it. So it doesn't exist on the harmonica, but you can bend another note down to it. But to try and play fast melodies using that bent note is really, you know, too difficult to do in tune and cleanly. So, yeah, I just altered one note. And because it was, I was playing Irish music on it, and it was still mostly in the Richter tuning, I called it Paddy Richter tuning. And that's become really quite a popular tuning now. Mm-hmm. It's used a lot for not just Irish music, but pop music, old-timey music, you know, bluegrass, etc.
Yeah. I'm curious, most serious harmonica players, how many harmonicas do you estimate they might own?
Well, if you do get into it, you need at least 12, because just one for each key. And then, you know, there's sad cases like myself who have lots of different tunings. So, you know, I've probably got a 50 harmonicas in my case that I carry around. But that's probably a bit extreme. But most would, you know, any pro harmonica player, if you look in this case, probably you've got about 20 at least.
For beginners, would it make sense to just get a chromatic harmonica and be able to play all the notes?
That's a good question. Well, the answer to that is yes and no. chromatic harmonicas are great, and they do have all the notes. And, you know, some people like Toots Thielemans and Stevie Wonder, and quite a few classical players do amazing things with chromatic harmonicas. But there's these things on harmonicas called valves, wind savers. And what they do is they isolate reeds from the others. And the whole point, the whole way you get this kind of, this thing that I do in the Asia bend, you know, that bending sound, that's called interactive reed bending. So basically it's what happens when you get a blow reed and a draw reed, and you get an interaction between them. It's really quite fascinating on a technical level. It was only really worked out what was going on by in the 1980s, even though people had been bending notes. But you get this sound between the two. It's called interactive reed bending. That's one of the most appealing and soulful sounds of the harmonica. Now, on a chromatic harmonica, you can't get that because these valves isolate the reeds from each other. So even though you can play all the notes, you can't really play them with as much, you know, guts and soul as you can as on a diatonic harmonica. Depends what you want to play. If you want to play pure, you know, clean notes without too much inflection, and you want to play maybe classical music or whatever, definitely the chromatic is the one for you. If you want to play a bit more earthy, soulful music, you know, I'd recommend a diatonic, and then maybe, or even you can mess with the chromatic harmonica and make it sound more earthy and diatonic, which is what I do with mine.
Okay. What do you do to achieve that?
Well, one of them is to take the valves off, you know, these little wind savers. I take half of them off. That's one of the things that I came up with that in 1980, and a lot of people do that these days. This is a chromatic harmonica. It's quite an interesting one. Some people say it looks like a mobile phone. It's actually made by the Hohner company, you know, the ones you mentioned back in the day. But I'll just show you. So this one pulls apart. So there's a slider there, which is it shifts your air around. And this one just pulls apart. So here are the actual reeds. You can see them there. And there's blow and draw reeds. The ones you can see on the outside are the actual draw reeds, and the blow reeds are the ones set inside. And you can see there's no valves on the outside. So that's what I've done. I've pulled all those off. And it means I can now bend the notes like on a blues harp. That's good. So now this chromatic harmonica that was a a fairly, maybe in my opinion, a little bit of a stiff sounding instrument. Now I can bend. So, for instance, a chromatic scale, normally you have to go with a button, and that's how you'd normally play it on a chromatic. Now I can go. So I can actually, get the in-between notes. Ooh. So I can bend them as well as play them with a slide. So now it's a much more... So it's now more of a soulful instrument, in my opinion. So that's what I do. One of the things I do.
Thanks for showing us. And you, in terms of your... experimentation that you're doing now, it's what are you willing to reveal some of the stuff you're trying to do?
Sure. I've just put out a harmonica. I don't have an example with me now, but it's called the Slip Slider, and this is it's a way to give the diatonic harmonica more bends. And this one here, mm-hmm. It's a shapeshifter, really. In order to get more bends, you have to have different note interactions, this blow-draw interactions that I was telling you about. So, for instance, in this hole here, you've got this, and that's the blow note, and then you've got the draw note. And you can bend the high note down to the low note, as I told you. But the low note can't bend. So what I do is I've made a harmonica where you can actually move a lower note. That one there, that draw note there, I can actually move that physically up to the same hole as the blow note, and then suddenly I can bend that blow note, and I can move that both ways. So that's called the slip slider. So this one is I'm just demonstrating with my thumb, but one of the real ones actually the whole harmonica slides from left to right, and that's something that allows you to get more notes. Thing that I'm working on for my own use is to try and get some sort of hybrid between the Asia bend and the normal diatonic, so it plays like both of them. You can actually switch between them and sound like each depending on how you're feeling just by pressing a slider. And that's quite a tricky one to make, but it's one that really appeals to me quite a lot. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple of little areas that I'm working on at the moment.
And some of your harmonicas have extra bass, which is really cool, and some are double.
I have made double harmonicas, yes. I don't have any with me right now. The harmonica's got a fairly high range. I mean, on the lowest harmonica is C3 note, which is the deepest note on a 4-octave chromatic harmonica. And I think it goes up to about C7 or something like that-ish. It's 4-octave range. So if you want to go down below C3, into the more bottom end, the reeds become really sluggish, they don't respond quickly. So I've started making harmonicas using accordion reeds, which are much bigger and louder. And so I've got a few sort of hacked up prototypes with these huge accordion reeds in them, and they do play a lot better in the bottom end. I mean, another way to go is simply use electronics, use pitch shifters and things like that, mm-hmm. which can sound very effective as well. And it's actually much easier in many ways.
Yeah.
Do you use effects on your violin?
I don't. I'm a classical player, and I'll actually be interviewing very soon Tracy Silverman, who's one of the people who developed the 6-string violin, and we'll be talking a lot about that with him. But it's a different world for me. I'm thinking harmonica is used in a lot of rock bands, and are people mostly now using MIDI now that they have that accessible?
No, not many people are. I mean, one of the big drawbacks with the MIDI harmonica is that you can't get interactive reed bending. There's no reeds in it. There's just these breath sensors.
Yeah.
And they don't respond to, I mean, the way you get this bending notes is by altering your vocal tract, your embouchure. I don't even see. My jaw drops down and various, you get all sorts of stuff going on in your vocal tract to make the reeds bend. That just has no effect on a breath sensor. So you can't get that kind of sound. You have to use pitch benders, with fingers and things. And they're not really that responsive. So To be honest, there isn't, no, there's not a lot of interest so far in MIDI harmonicas. I mean, there's a niche interest, but yeah, they're not, however great they are, they do lack that immediate bending expression. Mm-hmm. It's a big part of the harmonica's appeal.
You were just saying in the vocal track, so is the larynx actually activated when you're playing to some extent?
I don't know. There are some couple of sort of X-ray videos on YouTube with of people playing harmonicas, and there's all sorts of stuff going on with. So yeah, whether the larynx is activated, I don't know, but certainly your mouth chamber shape and everything, and your tongue movement is huge amounts going on. Same with singing. Yeah. I mean, you know, like they've done people singers in MRI, put them in an MRI scan, and opera singers, and then do their thing, and it's mind blowing what's going on in their mouth. You know, so yeah, the harmonica is very similar. There's an mm-hmm. awful lot of fine tongue control, embouchure, changing, and I mean it changes throughout the range, because when you bend a low note, you have to use a very big mouth. When I bend a high note, it's much more of a small mouth. So as I go up through the harmonica, my mouth shape and everything is changing a lot. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on, but most of us don't even know what we're doing because we can't see what we're doing, you know, so that's...
Yeah. So to end, I was just wondering if we could circle back to your early days when you're just learning the harmonica and you were very poor, right? You were shoveling coal and sleeping on friends' couches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looking back at your life then, is there advice you would give yourself or things you could say to your younger self just starting out?
Good point. Well, I mean, it's such a different world then. I mean, you know, we're talking the late 70s, you know. Nowadays, you know, people are in far better situation in terms of learning. I mean, there's just, you know, the YouTube is just an incredible resource for learning. I had nothing like that. It was all just, you know, I was living in the back of beyond in New Zealand, and, you know, there was just the odd record that had some harmonica on. So try and transfer... when you say that my younger self back in 1976, what would I tell myself then? I think I did everything I could at that time. I mean, but yeah, I if I were growing up now, I think I'd have far, you know, I definitely have way more stuff to access in terms of learning. I could probably learn a lot faster just because, for instance, the way you play the harmonica, there's several different embouchures. There's what's called tongue blocking. And then there's what I do is called lipping, and there's another one called what's it called? Where you actually roll your tongue and play through a roll. That's how I started, did this rolled tongue thing, because I could get a single note easier. It was only after about a year or two, a year and a half, that I found I couldn't do quite a few what some of these blues players were doing, and I realized there must be something I'm doing wrong. What was it? So then I tried experimenting with other embouchures, discovered, okay, if I do lipping, which is just, you know, using your lips without the tongue on the harmonica, suddenly I could play way more stuff. So I probably would have picked that up within 5 minutes nowadays.
Were there, I guess what I was partly thinking was there must have been times where you were tempted to give up, but you're obviously so persistent, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I just got obsessed, you know, and totally driven. So, no, I never thought of giving up, really.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, despite the fact that it was a hand-to-mouth existence, you know, for many years, I was just tunnel vision.
Well, thanks so much for sharing all your perspectives and your beautiful playing with us today. And is there anything I didn't ask you about that you'd like to talk about with in relation to your business or your teaching or your anything at all?
Off the top of my head, I can't really think of anything. I'm just really thank you so much for getting in touch, and it's really nice to know we've got a friendship with Jenny Rothfield in common. I'm really sorry about the technical side of today. I know it might come out a little bit stilted with the delay. We couldn't avoid it, really. I hope that won't put people off, watching the video anyway.
Yeah, I think I will just edit it so that some of the delays that we experience, they won't experience. Yeah, it was funny. We had some very spotty internet today, so I couldn't see you. Much of the demonstration, you were saying, can you see this? But actually, for my podcast listeners, they also will not be able to see everything you're doing, but they can check out the video version, which should be clear. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we battled through, didn't we, Leah? So thank you so much for getting in touch. Really nice talking to you. And I look forward to seeing it when it finally comes out and checking out some of your other ones as well.
Season one of this podcast had 20 episodes, and season two continues with a really interesting mix of musicians talking about their lives and careers with perspectives on overcoming challenges, finding inspiration and connection through a life so enriched with music. Please follow this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts to be informed about each new episode.